the best coaches in the game. We really ain't playing. We regroup up in the Slack chat where the coaches debrief. We be piecing these puzzles, occupy the chunk of the pie. Ain't no lie when we hit the block, helmets casket is top. You be seeing helmet after helmet, helmet after helmet. First place, second place, fifth place, eighth place, 12th place, 15, 16, 20. So many helmets, you got blurred vision, we got too many.
Hello, race fans, and welcome to Taco's Fast 40. We're headed to Atlanta this week for the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500. This is the first race in a week. I know it's been a rapid fire, usually a race every 3 or 4 days since the return of NASCAR. The drivers got a nice little week off, and we're back at it again at Atlanta. Just got done watching the truck race and the Xfinity race back-to-back today. Of course, they're laying down the rubber for tomorrow's race. And real quick, I'm going to go over the ins and outs of this track, what makes Atlanta unique, how to attack it, and then, of course, we're going to go through the entire field and just do the fast forward that we usually do every week. Before I get started, of course, you can find us at dfsarmy.com, or you can gain access to our coaching cheat sheets and the research station, which has all the data that I'll be referencing throughout this pod, and of course the Domination Station lineup optimizer. That's dfsarmy.com. Promo code TACO to get your lifetime 20% off. So diving right into Atlanta, this is another 1.5 mile quad oval. So after taking a little bit of a break from the 1.5 mile tracks at Bristol last week, we are right back at it with Atlanta. This is one of the higher banked tracks, just like Charlotte and Texas and Darlington. The banking is at 24 degrees here, which means it goes a little bit faster. I think the all-time fastest qualifying lap set by Bill Elliott, my favorite driver of all time, was done here. When they were messing with the rules package a little bit, they were going super lightning fast. And with the exception of Dover, this is the oldest racing surface in NASCAR. Hasn't been repaved since 1997. What does that mean? It means tire wear. Tire wear, tire wear. So we're going to want to look at those Darlington races a little bit because there are also a lot of tire wear there. And you'll see some of the other tracks we may use. I actually have one of the sections in the new revamped research station that shows for each stat. You know, I have each stat broken down to different splits, and one of them I do have them on high tire wear tracks. So tracks like Homestead and tracks like Darlington, you know, the ones where Auto Club also, yeah, just the ones where your tire fall off is very severe and very noticeable. That is one of the major differences that we'll see between this track and Charlotte, where the tire they brought there to Charlotte did not really wear at all. And you're looking at maybe like a half second difference if you don't pit, as we're here, it's like a 3 or 4 second difference. Very massive. We saw it very clearly in the Truck and Xfinity race this week. They'll be running the same tire as we have for Cup Series, that if you don't pit and you're on the lead lap, you're screwed. So we're not as likely to see an issue like we saw with Chase Elliott, where, you know, he was leading at the end. He goes to pit, other people stayed out, and they win. Probably not going to happen here, as tires are definitely of the utmost value here at Atlanta. And something else we see is that this is generally a green flag, caution-free sort of race. You get some very long green flag stretches, and there will be very few people on the lead lap. I think this is the third lowest track as far as average percent of the field that ends up on the lead lap. We see only 38% of drivers finishing on the lead lap. Compare that to even, yeah, it's very similar to Charlotte. We saw that happening there. And, you know, compare that to, say, a road course race where you have like 70% or more of the field finishing on the lead lap due to it being so huge. You know, that's going to, it's going to change how things work. It's going to change how the lucky dog works overall. And there's still the outside chance of there being wrecks and cautions, whatnot. You can't rule that out. But generally speaking, it's probably going to be a pretty predictable race. You're going to see guys dominating for very long stretches at a time. And historically, that guy has almost always been Kevin Harvick. If you look at the top scores of all time using the historical tab on the research station, you will see that the highest score here in this generation of cars actually put up by Jimmy Johnson, who started near the very back. And of course, Jimmy tends to do pretty well when he starts near the back historically. And it was no exception here in 2015 when he won, starting 37th, with 90 lead laps and 60 fast laps to put up a 135 fantasy point score on DraftKings. But the highest scores after that, the next four slots on that leaderboard all belong to one Mr. Kevin Harvick. So Kevin Harvick is undoubtedly the king of this track. When people look to this track and try to study it, they usually study what Kevin Harvick has done here, and the results kind of speak for himself. So he's going to be, he's the most expensive. I don't think he's expensive enough. He's been optimal on DraftKings every single year since 2013. And he had over 100 lead laps in the last five races before last year when he only led 45 laps. And that also coincided with the change in racing package as well. The 1.5 mile tracks are all tracks over a mile long. So that could be an interesting angle here. He might not be as bona fide of a lock as he usually is. So there might be a little bit more to look into here, but generally speaking, this is Harvick's playground. A lot of people know that, so it's no surprise that he's the most expensive guy. And the last time we were out at an intermediate track, Harvick had a real fast race car in that second Charlotte race. So, gotta be looking to Charlotte, but I'll also definitely be looking to how guys did at the two Darlington races. I think that might be a little bit more telling, but one thing that does have in common with Charlotte is it has extra laps. So usually at a 1.5 mile tracks, Chicago, Homestead, Las Vegas, Kentucky, Kansas, those tracks, they have 267 laps each. We're going to run 325 laps here. And you see those number of laps usually, we see extended races like this at Texas, at Charlotte. So we're going to be doing the full 500 miles here. Not going to be quite as long as the Charlotte. This is more comparable to the second Charlotte race, usually. This last one is actually reduced. But luckily for us at the research station here, we can we just see all the lead lap and fast lap stats broken down into per 325 lap numbers. So everything is looked at accordingly. It's really nice to be able to adjust it that way and look at everything from an even standpoint so we can determine how good guys did even when the number of laps in a race were different. Another thing we're going to be looking for at this track is, of course, pit road. We want these guys to have at least some solid pit road prowess. We've seen that screw over some guys, at least in the races that we saw today in the Xfinity and trucks. So you just don't want to be someone who's losing a whole bunch of spots in the pits. I know that could be one of the harder things to judge, of course. And then this has also been a very, very, very friendly track to the pole sitter. As the preferred groove, the inside groove here is pretty strong. It's not like Darlington where the outside groove is strong. Even though there's similar high banking here, inside groove, it's the reason that Harvick's been so successful here. And when you get the preferred groove on that initial restart, guys starting on the pole averages 97 lead laps. That's over 60 lead laps more than any other starting position here. So the guy sitting on the pole, who this week it is Chase Elliott, should look to have a huge bump in expected performance. Before we hop into the field here, I think it's going to be pretty apparent that Harvick and Chase Elliott are going to be the chalk of the slate. And DraftKings really waited on pricing this week. They waited to see where guys were going to draw for the starting positions because we were doing a kind of semi-random drawing again this week. Elliott ended up with the pole, and Harvick's back in ninth. Other than that, guys aren't really too far away from where we'd expect them to be. So there aren't any plays that like stick out big time. And if they are, the guys are priced accordingly. We've got some guys that seem to be pretty underpriced, overpriced. DraftKings did a lot of work just trying to dynamically price these guys. Although I think I prefer it the other way, where guys are just kind of priced based on the odds, and then you let the qualifying and practice and stuff come as it does. But of course, without qualifying or practice, it kind of is what it is. So up at the top here, we've got Kevin Harvick. Already talked about him a good amount. Won here in 2018, and like I said, he's dominated 100-plus lead laps over the last six races until this last race in 2019, which is the first race we ran in this new package. So now we could see, again, with the lower number of laps led by Harvick, I could be telling that maybe he's not as bona fide of a lock as he usually is. I mean, historically, all of his stats are going to leap off the page big time. Averages well over 100 lead laps per race, 136 lead laps per race at Atlanta. Nobody else in the field even averages over 30. We've seen the other dominators here. Yeah, we've seen Kyle Larson, for example. He dominated last year. Not in the field. So Harvick statistically leaps off the page way better than everyone else, projects way better than everyone else. Going to have to kind of consider him like a Kyle Busch at a short track in this regard. And you're going to have to kind of decide what to do with him. He's going to be extreme chalk, especially on FanDuel, where you can basically play anyone that you want. And there's enough value at the bottom, especially with a certain Michael McDowell at $5,200 starting 36th, that you're going to be able to play anybody that you want here. If you just want to go heavy Harvick, I could definitely understand that. And if you want to go underweight on him and hope something happens, that could be the move too. And I don't know about banking on things happening to people here, because this is not a track where usually you'd want to take that strategy at, as guys usually tend to finish this race a lot more consistently than at other tracks. But maybe you're hoping that Harvick just doesn't have it like he didn't have it in the first Charlotte race. Maybe he unloads a little slow. That being said, of course he has the line that everybody studies here. And just generally, even at just all of the intermediate tracks overall, so far this year, with the exception of Bowman, he has the best driver rating in the field. And last season, he had the best driver rating of anyone at intermediate tracks, coming right behind the champion, Kyle Busch. So, Atlanta aside, it's still a good spot for Harvick, but his average running position here is 3.6. The next closest would be, what, Martin Truex Jr., 8.1, or Brad Keselowski at 7.7. We'll talk about Brad in a little bit, but he's definitely been gift-basketed some of these wins. He's won twice over the last 3 years. Those have been given to him in a gift basket by Harvick at the end. Usually something happens. I mean, that's basically what we saw these last two races today for both Trucks and Xfinity. We saw basically the whole slate come down to guys getting late pit penalties, getting shuffled back. That's kind of what happens here. So that's the only reason that Harvick doesn't have like a bunch of wins here. But again, the dominator points, especially with the added laps for a 1.5-mile race, going to be huge here. And of course, you're going to be looking to Harvick before anybody else, besides maybe Chase, starting on the pole, to collect those dominator points. So super chalk there. He finishes in the top five 50% of the time at 1.5-mile tracks, and easily leads the field in top 10 percentage at 1.5-mile tracks with an 84% top 10 rate. Much higher than anyone else. I think next highest after him is Truex and Kyle Busch at 68%. So statistically, he's the guy you need to play, but there might be some game theory to looking somewhere else. He's the Vegas favorite, just barely over Elliott starting on the pole, which makes sense. But he's not like an overwhelming favorite like you might expect him to be. Next up, we got Kyle Busch. We're going to be going down just DraftKings salary top to bottom. Keep it simple. Kyle Busch is starting fourth. Not a track that he has done a whole lot at. Over the last 3 years, he's only led 9 laps. And overall, average of 7.8 lead laps at Atlanta. 12.8 fast laps. Very, very low dominator numbers for Kyle Busch. He was a winner here in 2013. Other than that, just kind of a pedestrian car running top 5, top 10-ish, but not really doing a whole lot with it. He's only ran 69% of his laps in the top 10. While that is nice, pales in comparison to Harvick's 98%, Hamlin's 85%, Logano's 90%. All the guys around him much higher. Less percentage of the laps ran in the top 15, actually, not top 10. But I'm sure for Harvick, it's probably the same for top 10. So Kyle Busch, overpriced here. I think both the JGR guys, really all the JGR guys here, are a bit overpriced. This seems to be more of a Ford's playground, at least historically. The JGR cars seem a step behind, especially Kyle Busch. He has not led much at all this year. I don't think he's led one lap at an intermediate track all year. That's where Harvick has led 67 laps, at least per 325 laps driven at 1.5 mile tracks. So Kyle Busch probably not going to be popular at all. Could dominate early, maybe starting fourth, but I doubt it. Probably lean in against him doing that, but it could be a nice sneaky play. He's going to be about as low-owned as he ever is up here. Yeah, $11,200. I don't think a lot of people will pay for that. I think people are just going to go to Harvick there. And then at $10,800, an even worse example of this play is Denny Hamlin. He's had some problems with wrecks here in the past. We don't have like complete data on him, but he's led more laps and had more fast laps. Well, not as many fast laps, but he has led more laps than Kyle Busch historically. Averages 15 lead laps per race. But that's about it. Again, he's struggled alongside Kyle Busch when it comes to intermediate tracks. He's always going to be running top 10, but it's very rarely ever out in front. It seems like other types of tracks where he tends to do that. He's got, some wins at 1.5 mile tracks. He actually has more wins than Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick since 2019. But I don't know how earned they would be. So they finish top 10, top 5 way more than he does. Really not liking Hamlin. I think he goes extremely low owned. He's like 12-1, where Harvick is 5-1. So he's got Harvick has like double the chance to win compared to Hamlin, but their price is pretty similar. Just well overpriced in my opinion here. But could be that sneaky GPP play that wins it for somebody, but that's a pretty low chance, I would say, if that happens. And he just doesn't have the dominator and fast lap upside that I'm looking for in these guys. Joey Logano, starting third. Now, he's an interesting play. He can lead laps pretty much anywhere. We saw last year he started leading a lot more laps at these 1.5 mile tracks than he had historically, which had always been an issue for him. And even this year, he has the fourth most average lead laps at 1.5 mile tracks. No crazy numbers here. He has dominated at Atlanta before pretty significantly, and he averages 26 lead laps here, which is actually second behind Kevin Harvick, who averages 110 more lead laps than him. Of course, you got his teammate, who's really been the beneficiary here, winning twice in the last 3 years. But I think Logano is priced way higher than Keselowski this week, like way higher. He's priced up like DraftKings expects him to lead laps early or something. I think that's going to keep some people off of him. But I don't really mind the play, actually. I think that he can lead early. He's starting right behind Elliott, who... I guess those two have some bad blood after last week. They kind of... If it wasn't for the distancing standards and optics and stuff, I'm sure they would have gotten into it last week, as Elliott just straight-up wrecked Logano at Bristol at the very end. I think that Logano should have won at Bristol. Of course, I'm not looking at Bristol. when I'm looking at this race, but something interesting to note there. I don't really mind him, even though he's overpriced here. Jimmy Johnson also, insanely overpriced. Yet another really overpriced guy here. He's been priced up because he's been starting like way in the back, but he's starting just 15th. And $10,200, way too expensive here. Has not led laps at Atlanta recently. Of course, he won here back-to-back in 2015 and 2016. Since then, it has been a nightmare for him here. I know that Hendrick is a lot faster now, but the fact that he costs more than Chase Elliott, given the circumstances this week, is kind of crazy to me. So I don't really like him much at all. I guess he can kind of move up, and he's been, again, they've been kind of faster, but I would much rather look to his teammates. And then you've got Chase Elliott, $9,900. Way underpriced for someone starting at the pole at a track where starting at the pole is such a huge deal. He's a Georgia kid, so this is about as hometown of a track as it gets here. Of course, his dad has the history here at this track. Now, he has never led a lap here. That's going to change lap one. I'm pretty darn sure of it. Ran into some issues here last year, ended up finishing 19th. Other than that, it's all top 10 finishes for him. Averaging about 10 fast laps per race. Again, he's never led, but he has the third most average intermediate track lead laps behind only his teammate Bowman and, of course, Harvick, who've just been insane so far at that track type this season. I think that Elliott leads a significant chunk with some fast laps off the bat here until at least competition caution. And honestly, just out over the last several races, Elliott has found a way to be the car to beat every single time. He's had the best car on the track. I know he crashed with Logano last week, but just been consistently having an amazing car, putting up fast laps, way more fast laps than we're used to seeing from him. Averaging 26.7 fast laps per race at intermediate tracks. Again, third behind only Bowman and Harvick. You're going to hear that a lot. So yeah, he's one of the guys I'm definitely looking forward to rostering here. And rostering a ton. You're going to need a ton of him to go over the field in ownership. I expect him to be at least 40% owned, maybe even over 50% owned on FanDuel, where you can just kind of jam guys like him willy-nilly. And, you know, the chance of him having a catastrophic failure here is going to be a bit lower than at other tracks. Clean air is going to be nice for him. But, of course, anything can happen. Martin Truex Jr. at $9,600, starting 11th. He has six straight top seven, or I guess top eight finishes here. Runner-up here last year. Now, one-and-a-half-mile tracks have historically been his jam. Not so much this year. He's kind of fallen off, really, over the last 2 years since the package has changed. Before then, he was the undisputed king of the one-and-a-half-mile track. I think that's kind of gone by the wayside a little bit. He rarely ever leads laps here because Harvick is usually stealing them all, but he tends to run up top almost all race. I kind of see that happening again. At $9,600, definitely a safe guy you want to take some shares of. I think he can lead. He just hasn't historically, but he's definitely someone that can. And you know that fast laps always come to him in big chunks. So I don't mind him. I like him a lot better than his teammates, Bush and Hamlin, at a much cheaper price. And starting back in 11th, that's fine to me. Pretty safe floor, I'd say. And could always win. And, of course, he's very good at adjusting his car on the fly. So the lack of practice, I think, is actually a bonus to him. Just given the circumstances and how good they are at making adjustments on the car. Kurt Busch at $9,400. He's at 20-1. I think he's overpriced here, starting 12th. I know that he's been a top 10 machine all season long. And at this track, top 10 machine almost always finishes top 8. I think he will finish high yet again. It's just the dominator upside that I think is missing. I know he has dominated at Atlanta fairly recently, but the fast laps just are never there pretty much wherever he goes. He tends to have great finishes, super solid, consistent finishes. Like, I think he's an awesome FanDuel play because of that. He's very safe to get you them laps completed and put up a good finishing position. But as far as dominating and getting the fast laps for DraftKings, not huge on that. and he's overpriced. He should be in the high 8Ks where he usually is. $9,400, that is a steep price to pay, especially considering for $300 cheaper, we can get Alex Bowman at $9,100. It seemed like everybody got the memo to get off of him last week at Bristol, and as expected, underperformed in regards to, you know, what he's been doing the rest of the season. But if you look at him just through the lens of intermediate tracks this season, he is far and away the best play. Averages 73 lead laps at intermediate tracks and 46 fast laps. That's 15 more than Harvick. Just absurd numbers there. Has had an ultra lightning fast car that has dominated every single time at an intermediate track, and we saw the signs of that coming last year with a change in the Chevy chassis and just Hendrick overall taking a humongous step up this year. I don't care, this track history here is kind of crappy. Of course, you know, going back to 2015, 2014, completely scrapped those results on a crappy car, but over the last 2 years in this 88 car, he's finished 15th and 20th. Don't really care about that. He is a much different driver now. His historical driver rating average is 58 at Atlanta, but this season at intermediate tracks, he leads the field with a 114 driver rating. I expect him to go right back into it and just crush his $9,100 price tag and be one of the cars to beat. I'm not scared of him at all. I like the bet at 9-1. I'd either straight betting or taking a top three, but really I like the Dominator points he can rack up, the fast laps. That car has just been red hot all season long, and even last year, dating back to the intermediate races from last season, really with this race package, the Bowman crew is just absolutely hit the nail on the head here. He's going to be one of my favorite plays on the slate. And then you got at $8,900. You've got Brad Keselowski, who's won two of the last 3 years, finishing runner-up in 2018. So he's going to be someone that leaps off the page for a lot of people. He's tied with Hamlin, actually, for the most wins at intermediate tracks over the last 2 years since the change to this race package. And he's finished top 10 63% of the races, 53% of the time he's finishing top five. So you can basically think of him as a safe top five car. Should run up there all day long. Has been perfectly solid this season, although I would say he has, just like he has here historically, he's benefited specifically from Chase Elliott just handing him wins. But if it happens to him again, it doesn't matter who's handing him a win. If he gets handed another win, you're going to need him, especially at such a cheap price. So easy to fit in there. Now, I wouldn't mind fading those angles at all. Wouldn't say he's, like, from a merit standpoint, one of the plays I'm looking at. But he's definitely just so cheap and so, you know, generally puts himself in a position to run top five and capitalize on mistakes from other drivers. I don't mind Keselowski at all. Super cheap on DraftKings. Might not like him as much over there on FanDuel, but at least for DraftKings, he is well underpriced, especially with his teammate being like $1,600 more expensive. That's kind of crazy to me. You got Clint Bowyer, $8,700. Two straight top five finishes here, but not huge about it. Again, he's just like Kurt Busch, where he does not put up fast laps, and he doesn't lead laps here at all. In this range, why not just go to a Bowman or Keselowski, or even cheaper with Blaney's, pick a guy that could dominate, put up some real points. Bowyer starting fifth. I seriously doubt he leads again. He did get a bit lucky at the, which track was it? Was it Charlotte? No, it was the final Darlington race where they had the field inversion and he started on the pole and ended up leading a whole bunch of laps. I kind of want to ignore those. I know that if he's gift-basketed the lead, he can dominate in clean air. He's definitely capable of that. But earning the lead by his own merit, that's something that he just doesn't really do. So not big on Bowyer here at $8,700. I'll have minimal shares of him. Probably the hottest driver over the last few races, ownership-wise, just overall pricing-wise. They're going to keep underpricing Ryan Blaney like this. You just got to keep playing him. $8,500. His ownership has been insane. Very similar to last week, or even at Charlotte, you know. Track history is not very good at all. Don't really care about that, as this season he has been racing way, way, way better than he has historically. Basically, a Penske car you get for cheap. I mean, he's literally a Penske car. I mean, he's pretty much on par with Keselowski and Logano now. We get him way, way, way cheaper. And I think his crew chief, Gordon, is going to help him out. It's going to be a nice little... I think the results have clearly shown he's doing a lot better now, putting up Dominator points, running in the top. Again, last week at Bristol, he was wrecked out for, I think, the second time in three races for him there at Bristol. Unfortunate luck there. Now maybe keep the game loggers off him a little bit, but even still, before that, third and fourth at the two Charlotte races, and dominated some solid chunks. He's put himself in position to dominate in the last four races every time, and then also dominated a good chunk of Auto Club Speedway, getting fast laps and stuff. So in the mid 8Ks, that's a amazing price for Blaney. And after this, you'll notice a steep drop off when it comes to odds to win. Most of those guys are 15-1 or better, with the exception of like Bowyer. Now you're going to see guys 50-1 or significantly worse from this point on. Now, starting off this range with Tyler Reddick at $8,300, starting 24th. I think that's a great spot for him. The steeper the track, the better for Reddick, I say. Now, this is going to be a very hot race. As far as rookies go, I'm probably going to be looking at mostly to Bell, and we'll get to him. But Reddick has been so impressive this season, it's hard to deny him. So far in 7 1.5-mile tracks, or intermediate tracks ran, he has finished top 15 in 86% of them. I think that's 6 out of 7 races there. And about half of them, I think 3 out of the 7, he's finished in the top 10. He's looked seriously impressive. And you know, outside of just bum luck, last week at Bristol, he finished 14th and 9th at Charlotte, and 13th and 7th at Darlington. Of course, at Darlington, he is running his unique line. The outside, that was good. Of course, the inside line here is going to be preferred. That kind of goes against his style. But we've seen that his career arc so far has emulated Larson almost to a T early on. And Larson dominated this race. Very good here. So got to like me some Reddick, even though his price is finally starting to be right. And I would get used to him being priced around this range. He is very good. Then you've got the car that dominated last year and Matt Kenseth. And obviously... has taken a big step back so far in his results. Of course, it's not going to look like Larson. It would be ridiculous to expect that of him. Finished 16th last week at Bristol, 23rd, 27th, 30th, and 10th in the Charlotte and Darlington races since he stepped into the car. Had some issues with like spinning out and wrecking in some of those races, but generally, a top 15 finish would be considered pretty good for him. Could probably expect him to run, I don't know, around 15th, 16th or so. Just guesstimate there. Maybe even sliding up towards the top 10. But his past finishes here of top 5 finishes, I think he has 3 out of 4 top 5 finishes in the last 4 races here. That was in the older package. Still getting used to this new package. Definitely not as good. Definitely still rusty. It'll all come to him eventually, but... not going to get too excited about Kenseth yet. Maybe if his price is cheaper. But he's got to kind of show something first. Then you've got William Byron, $7,900. Very underpriced. I know he's been at some tracks that he is just not good at. Like, not good at Bristol. Did not run very well at Bristol. Well, he actually finished with a top 10. Finished 8th. But his average running position was 14th. He was significantly worse than that. Just kind of ended up doing all right. Been kind of disappointing compared to his teammates, for sure. I know he has wrecked out in a few races, screwing over some of his teammates in the process. But still, $7,900, real cheap price for guys starting back in 20th. Not a bad option, but also not someone I'm going to play in like cash or go too crazy with. But I like his equipment. I like his upside here. The guy I don't like, $7,700. Bubba Wallace starting 23rd. Not for me, not really a play I'm going to make there. no upside whatsoever when it comes to dominator points and scoring. At this range, with some of the guys around here, I'm going to be looking to guys that can do that. I'm not looking at a 400-1 Bubba Wallace for such an expensive price. That's, and maybe when he was starting back in the very back like he has the last couple races, sure, give him to me then, but not starting 23rd. I'm not going to pay up like that for Bubba. Sorry, that's just not going to happen. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., $7,600. Now, he's been Ricky most of the season, but top five finishes at both Las Vegas and the second Charlotte race. He could be very impressive when he actually keeps his car moving forward and not running into other cars, running into the wall. That generally happens here at Atlanta. He has four straight solid top 20 finishes, 10th in 2016. Starting 22nd, I do expect him to move up some spots, and this is definitely the track type where you want to take Ricky Stenhouse at. He's still cheap enough at $7,600. They'll be sure to have plenty of them. I think he has top 15 upside, even has top 10 upside, although it's not as apparent as some other guys, but again, looked seriously impressive in that second Bristol race, or second Charlotte race. Did not look good in Bristol, but that's Bristol. Don't really care about Bristol this week. So we're going to play Stenhouse for sure, and he's been insanely low-owned every single week. Easy to get leverage to the field on that guy when he's coming in around 10 to 12% every week. Now, a guy I really want to harp on here, a guy I love this week so much, is Christopher Bell, $7,400. I know his Toyota teammates were not really targets for me so far, but here's the thing. Starting back in 27th, looking back at Xfinity, we kind of know where Bell does his best work. He's a dirt racer guy. When I've noticed that when the track is hotter, when the grip is lower, when the tire wear is higher, and everyone's slipping and sliding around there, that's where Bell freaking thrives. Now, we have not seen him lead laps. We've not seen him put up fast laps pretty much at all this season. But we did see in that second Charlotte race, at least, where it was also pretty freaking hot. The Darlington and Charlotte, we saw him run in the top 10. Finished top 10 again at Bristol last week. The guy, when it's going to be this hot, I really, really like him just from a stylistic viewpoint here. Love me some Bell, starting way back in 27th. I think his top 10 upside for sure. And if he finishes top 10, you could definitely just pencil him into an optimal lineup there starting back in 27th. Waiting on the fast laps to come because I really want to see that from him. But for a rookie, I mean, this looks like a great spot for him. People are still very scared of rostering him. He should have been like the highest owned guy last week, I think, personally, starting back where he started, and people really under-rostered him, just in my opinion. I think people are scared of the crashes he's had so far this season. I'm not worried about it. I love me some Christopher Bell this week. It's going to be a core value play for me. Matt DiBenedetto, $7,200. God-awful luck here. He has never finished in the top 25 here in four races. Just an abysmal driver rating average of 42. Even in good equipment last year, finished 26th. Not sure if that was totally in his fault. He might have had some problems. I'll have to double check into that. But looking significantly better this year compared to last at intermediate tracks. Last year, he had a 61 driver rating at intermediate tracks, which were definitely a point of struggle for him. This year, he's stuck around with an 83 driver rating and an average running position of about 14th, finishing around 12th on average. If he could just do that, he'll be fine, I guess, in the lower 7K range, starting at 21st. But so far, he's not been able to figure out Atlanta. But, you know, this is the first time in a while that Atlanta hasn't been, like, the first race after the Daytona 500. And much better equipment now. I could definitely see an outlier performance from DiBenedetto, or maybe just a regular performance with his past performances being the outliers here, but should definitely finish better than where he starts, I think, and certainly he's going to have his first top 25 finish. I'm pr- pretty sure that's going to happen unless he runs into some trouble here. So don't mind DiBenedetto at all. Ryan Newman starting 17th. He's always a top 15 bet. It's kind of a coin flip whether or not he finishes there, but that's about where he's going to run. He's going to move up just a few spots. Usually pretty safe barring, you know, some trouble. He has put up significant fast laps at Atlanta before over the last three races, even though he's finished 13th, 22nd, and 35th. He's averaged 18 fast laps in those races per 325 lap runs. So liking Newman there, liking the fast lap upside. I do like seeing that for DraftKings. And he's usually someone that gets overowned generally because people like him. But not quite as much recently. Starting 17th with guys around him starting farther back. I think it'll just be a nice little value play that you can use to separate yourself from guys. Or just a nice mix and match play. Then you've got a weird kind of polarizing play here. Daniel Suarez at $6,900. He's 750-1 to win, right? Another track that he was very good at when he was in, you know, the JGR and Stuart Haas Racing Equipment. Finished 10th last year, for example. He's starting way back in 37th, but he's in that awful Gaunt Equipment. And he's gotten a little bit better throughout the course of the year. His average running position is 28th, right? Not anything too stellar there. But he's been running in like the lower 20s. But starting 37th, if he moves up, say, 10 spots and finishes 27th, that's 27 fantasy points. I don't see that doing anything. He would really need like a top 25 finish. And I don't think he gets there without significant DNS, which I just don't see coming at what I expect to be a very green flag race. So I'm not huge on Suarez, even though he is theoretically starting in a great spot with a good floor underneath him. I'm just not really buying it from Suarez. Probably not going to play much of him at all. Another guy I really dislike is Almirola, starting second. I think this is like becoming a trend here, I guess. Almirola starting second, and so far every time that's happened, we've been able to safely avoid him. Could run the top 10 for sure. Finished 8th here last year in this package, but not going to put up the fast laps or lead laps we need. I mean, maybe he gets lucky, but usually second place is just a place where you can avoid. Probably going to get shuffled back. Pretty quickly. He's got much better cars starting behind him. He's at $6,800, so at least his price compensation is pretty decent. We saw him in like the 7Ks before in this sort of starting spot, so he's not unplayable. He's just not someone I would want to target very heavily at all. And then you've got probably the most ridiculous mispricing on the slate. It's Erik Jones at $6,600. What in the world? This is his best track type over the last year. In this race package, he has finished in the top 10 63% of the time in 19 races. Top 5 32% of the time with a win. And he's $6,600 starting 14th. It's not even a bad starting spot for him at all. Ridiculous, ridiculous starting spot. Fast lap-wise, he's putting up some fast laps. About 2 per race here on average, but 7 per race on average this season and 12 last season. I think he's probably one of the best players on the entire slate. Even cash safe, even though he started up in 14th, it's just that price at $6,600 just opens up the world and lets you roster anyone you want because he should be priced in the 8Ks. No excuse for this awful pricing from DraftKings. They had a lot of time to think this over, so this is just them messing up. And he was seriously underpriced last week, and we saw him be extremely high owned, like 40% owned. I think that's going to happen again this week. I think he's going to be the third highest owned behind maybe only Chase Elliott and Harvick, and he might even get in the mix with those guys with how ridiculous his pricing is. He's finished 17th, 11th, and 14th here, so he's never finished worse than where he's starting at here. Just a ridiculous play. 28-1, way better than anyone else in this range. We're looking at 50-1 at best, anyone in like the upper 7Ks or worse on the entire slate here. So just a massive mess up by DraftKings, I think, in their salary department there. So just either lock and load player, maybe you fade him and just hope that you know, something happens to him. I'd probably rather just play him here. It's just some really awesome chalk with just the price just being so crazy. Nice little pivot off of him is going to be one of the Dylan Bros here. You got Austin starting 16th, who has been really good recently. 6th at Bristol, 8th at the second Charlotte race, and he ran top 10 all race, that race. Really impressive stuff from him there. 15th at Charlotte, and then 20th and 11th at the two Darlington races. So he's been able to put himself up there and run pretty decently. I expect him to move forward a little bit, although I think his ceiling is pretty limited at around like 10th place or so, where I see him kind of, I see that being around his ceiling. I mean, of course he could, like, you know, do some stuff late with pits or whatever and finish like 5th. It's not outside the realm of possibilities, but he only did that once in his 19 intermediate track races in this package. I just don't really see that happening. But a top 15 finish, maybe 10th to 15th, about what I see from him. And that's okay. It'll get you like 30 fantasy points. And that's fine at this price range. I just don't see him beating out Jones for value very often at all. And then you've got Ty Dillon, if you just want like the cash game play here. Pretty much always going to finish top 25 here, starting 28th. So you can naturally expect him to move up a few spots, replace differential. But I also think his upside is pretty limited by nature. I don't see him coming. I mean, he does have a 15th place finish here in 2017, 17th in 2016. That's going to be his upside. So it's not going to be anything too crazy. And he's a very, very, very similar play to a guy $100 cheaper than him. That'd be Ryan Preece. $6,200, starting 29th. I think he wrecked here last year in his first, his debut. And he is, he's not been good at 1.5 mile track so far, only finishing top 20 11% of the time in 19 races. But 25th to 20th, that's about where you'd expect him to run. So he's going to move up like 5, 6, 7 spots, which is okay. It's kind of the same as Ty Dillon. Might be a little bit worse than Dillon overall, but you know, if weird stuff happens, we could see, you know, Preece overperform a little bit. He has had some solid finishes. Like, he came 12th last week at Bristol. A real overperformance from him. Yeah, not terribly huge on him. Really all about this play at $6,100. Another rookie I'm going to, and that is Cole Custer. We did see the intermediate tracks were his best track type in the Xfinity Series. And so far, he's finished top 20 in most of them. He starts back in 31st at $6,100. It's very, very cheap. He's not putting up fast laps. Definitely not leading laps. But starting back there, he's just a nice little cash game play. Nice safe place differential play. And he probably has higher upside than guys like Preece and Ty Dillon starting in front of him by a few spots and priced up a little bit more over him. Those guys are 500 and 750 to 1. He's 150 to 1. So yeah, I love Custer for some obvious reasons here. And then John Hunter Nemechek at $6,000. He's starting in 18th. He's, that should be too high of a starting spot for a front row car. No, I don't mean like front row, like starting top two. I meant like front row motorsports he's running for. He's pretty much in the David Ragan car. And if David Ragan is starting 18th here, I wouldn't even really consider him. But honestly, I mean, the dude's just been balling out recently. 13th at Bristol, 13th at the second Charlotte race, 17th at the first Charlotte race, did wreck at the second Darlington race, but 9th in the first Darlington race. Just seriously been overperforming. When he's not wrecking, he's coming top 25 every single race so far this year. And he's already raced the track in trucks, although he did run into, he had some damage pretty much from the get-go and had a bad race because of it in the truck race, but at least he has a little bit of on-track time, albeit in a different series. Always helps a little tiny bit. So I don't mind Nemechek, even though usually I would ignore him starting at 18th. The guy I'm okay with ignoring, I guess, is Chris Buescher. $5,900, good price for him, but he's starting 13th. He did finish 9th here last year, but overall I expect him to go back into that 15th to 20th range. I know this is the best track type, but just starting a bit too high for me, and I don't know, not really someone I'm going to play too much of, although it won't be I won't have a full fade of him, of course. I might full fade Corey LaJoie starting 25th. because I don't see him doing much but going backwards here at best. He does have some fast laps here. Historically, averages 5. I'm not sure if that was because of an off-pit cycle or what, but I just don't really see him making much value here starting 25th. Even if he finishes where he starts, which would be a really good race for him, that's not even cracking 20 fantasy points, so not too huge on that. Now we're getting into the scrub range. There are actually some scrub plays I like this week instead of being able to skip over this entire row like I usually would at a 1.5 mile track where so few guys are going to finish on the lead lap and you're going to see guys finishing laps down. There are actually a small handful of plays I like here, and you'll see why in a second. We're going to start off with Reed Sorensen starting dead last. Again, not because he has the slowest car or anything. He didn't qualify dead last. He just drew dead last. He really has about a 31st, 32nd place car here. We've seen him finish 31st and 29th here historically, although the 29th was back in 2014. But overall, we have seen him crack the top 30 in a few races. He's finished, hasn't raced in a little while, but the last two races at Darlington and Phoenix, he finished 29th and 30th. So I can see him moving up several spots. If you need a punt super low in the low 5Ks and you're not using McDowell or already have him, then Sorensen's probably the best way to go here. You can't go backwards. And I expect him to move about 8 or 9 spots forward, which that'll put you past 20 fantasy points, so at least it's better than LaJoy. Still not crazy huge about the place. Just if you need to take someone, he's there for you. And I guess the pivot off of him would be BJ McLeod, starting 39th. I don't think his upside is nearly as good as Sorensen with the car he's driving, but he did finish 32nd here last year. Again, not as good of a car. He did finish 28th at Bristol last week, but I think he's just pretty good at Bristol. Outside of that, he's like a 35th, 36th place car usually. So not as high of upside for him as Sorensen. Yeah, Timmy Hill starting back at 38th. Not a huge fan of that. Might get up to like 31st at best. I see him being a worse version of the Reed Sorensen play. Really a worse version of the BJ McLeod play, honestly. Then you've got the main play in this range I'm going to talk about here. Michael McDowell, who I guess they're factoring in like previous race pricing into their current pricing. Because McDowell, if you remember, he was priced like minimum price for a few weeks because he was starting like third. I think he started like third one race and has been starting way, way too high. So people have safely been ignoring him. His ownership's been pretty much nothing. Last week he was actually a pretty decent play and was still underpriced, but now it's just ridiculous. He drew a 36th place starting spot. He can finish top 25 at intermediate tracks since last year when they started this package. He's finished top 25 68% of the time, top 20 21% of the time, and he's starting back in 36th at $5,200. The case for playing him is pretty obvious. If you need to punt at all, I'm seriously going to look at McDowell first and foremost before I look at any of these scrub guys here. And then we can kind of just run through the last few guys here because they're all kind of scrubs starting too far back. I don't mind Quinn Half starting 35th. He was one of the better scrubs here, but still, I wish I wouldn't really consider playing him until he starts back like 38th or so or worse. You got Garrett Smithley starting 34th. That's going to be a no for me, dog. You got Brandon Poole starting in 33rd. He's been pretty good. He's been one of the best scrub cars of like the 1500 to 1 guys. He's been probably the best up there with like Sorensen and Greg Golding. He's just ran into some mechanical issues recently, but starting 33rd, I don't think that's quite good enough, but I'd probably put him as my third favorite scrub behind McDowell and Sorensen. Don't even want to put McDowell in the scrub category, but I kind of have to just based on how he's priced, but, not big on Poole this week. And then Josh Balicki starting 32nd, that's like an unacceptable play there. That's a ridiculous play to me. I had full fade on. J.J. Yaley starting 30th. He's in the best car, probably, of any of these scrubs besides McDowell. In the 77 Spire car that we saw Chastain drive in and it's looked pretty good, about like a 29th place car, but starting 30th, I don't see where he's going to get a scoring from. He's not going to come like top 25. And then the easiest fade on the board, Joey Gase starting 26. He's going backwards, and honestly, it's just going to be a coin flip whether or not he scores a negative fantasy point. So you can safely uncheck him from the domination station, which you can get access to at dfsarmy.com. Use promo code TACO to sign up. That's been the Fast 40 for Atlanta. Good luck at your race. You got to put those helmets up on top, represent the Army. And we do that every week anyway, so you might as well make it your helmet that's up on top. You can come join us. So dfsarmy.com, promo code TACO. Atlanta Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500. That'll do it, and I will see you guys at the next race that I have, you know, starting positions for well ahead of time and not like right before the race starts, which hopefully is often, early and often. Let's keep this going, and we're going to Martinsville on Wednesday, and then next Sunday we've got Homestead. Next Saturday we get Dale Jr. back in Xfinity driving that number 8 car. It's going to be a nice little throwback there. Really hoping they put him in a Budweiser scheme. I know that Budweiser doesn't really sponsor a car at the moment, but that would be awesome. It's probably not going to happen, but that would be a nice little nostalgia bomb for people. So can't wait for that. And I'll see you guys then. Good luck out there. Later.